Ne anlarım. Ne anlarım.
Tens of thousands of people will tell you, quite seriously, that the phrase is, "Turn me on, dead man," spoken over and again.
Turn me on, dead man. Turn me on, dead man. Turn me on, dead man. Turn me on, dead man.
Actually, what you're hearing is a segment of a montage of sounds and music called Revolution 9, turned around and played backward. Forward, the recording sounds like this.
Number 9, number 9, number 9. Number 9.
So you may be saying, what? Number it's all part of a new great American game. So great, in fact, that it just threatens to become a sociological phenomenon. It involves the Beatles, specifically one Beatle, Paul McCartney, the cute one, the one who writes the music and the songs. He's supposed to be dead.
He blew his mind out in a car. He didn't notice that the lights had changed.
This is Christopher Glenn. I personally do not believe the raging rumors about Paul McCartney, but that doesn't mean that you can't if you want to. What we intend to do for the next few minutes is examine the evidence, and there is a lot of it, and it is sometimes very convincing. And also, try to get a viewpoint on the phenomenon itself, the spread of the story, and the way it is influencing our contemporary existence. To be honest, at the outset, let's divulge that the man who is generally credited with providing the first compendium of clues about Paul's death doesn't believe that he's dead. He's John Summer, a junior at Ohio Wesleyan University. A local newspaper picked up his theories, and off they took. But...
Well, let me say this first. I don't believe Paul's dead. And I believe that this was intentional, that they wanted the masses to discover these inferences to Paul's death and take it as such and then let the rumor pass over.
Why would they want to do this?
Well, for their own enjoyment. It can't be anything else, really. You know, it can't be publicity because they certainly don't need it. And, you know, how far can you go in the musical field without getting a little bit bored, you know, sometimes? Maybe you'd like to test something on the public, try to... You know, test reaction. I imagine they probably get a big kick out of it. I don't know. I don't think that they expected it to go this far, really.
I listen for your footsteps coming up the drive. Listen for your footsteps, but they don't arrive. Waiting for your knock, dear, on my old front door. I don't hear it. Does it mean you don't love me?
The theory on Paul's death says he was out alone in his Aston Martin early one morning, depressed after an all-night, not-too-successful recording session in 1966. He crashed and was decapitated.
Sorry that I doubted you, I was so unfair. You were in a car crash and you lost your hair. You said that you would be late about an hour or two. Was it that song?
Subsequently, the theory continues, a Paul McCartney look-alike contest was held. The winner was spirited away for minor plastic surgery and has been impersonating him ever since. The fans say they can prove it in the songs, in the jackets to the record albums, and in other places. Clues by the dozen are lurking.
Number 9, number 9, number 9, number 9, number 9, number 9. Number 9,
A lot of the clues turn up in a composition called I Am the Walrus. The work is structurally one of the most interesting the Beatles have ever done. John Lennon, who writes the words, has taken the language itself and is toying with it, shredding the very fabric of the sound of the words and then reweaving it. There is this line, which appears not to make much sense at first. Now, relate the words to a car crash. I'm crying, waiting for the van, that is, the ambulance, to come. Stupid, bloody Tuesday. I am the Eggman. Easter eggs? Resurrection? I am the walrus, symbol of death in the low countries of Europe. Goo-goo-ka-choo, a phrase spoken in Finnegan's wake upon the attainment of a state of cosmic consciousness of unity with the universe. In other words, attainment of death. Later, in the long, long fade-out of the music, a scene from Shakespeare is performed. If you listen very closely, you can hear part of King Lear, Act 4, Scene 6.
The letters of some fine stuff I bring to Edmund Earl of Blunt. He denies upon the British government. Oh, untimely
death. Serviceable villain. You killed the vice of the Prime Minister. Stand up and retire.
Sit you down, Father. Rest you.
It plays like this, and you must forgive my horrid acting. Bury my body. Oh, untimely death. Death, a serviceable villain. What? Is he dead? Sit you down, Father. Rest you. The Walrus Paul reference crops up again in a later album during a song called Glass Onion, which deals in large part with the thematic material of earlier Beatles songs. Listen to the Beatles themselves giving another clue for you all.
I told you about the walrus and me, man. You know that we're as close as can be, man. Well, here's another clue for you all. The walrus was Paul. Standing on a cat like, oh yeah.
The walrus, they say, was Paul. But the walrus is dead, goo-goo-ka-choo. If Paul is dead, Paul must be buried. And there is an audible clue for that, too. At the end of the song Strawberry Fields Forever, there's an interesting and a complex musical coda which fades slowly away, and then right at the end, and very faintly, somebody says, I buried Paul. Did you hear it? I buried Paul. Of course, if you go to the Beatles record company, they'll tell you the words are, I'm very bored. And personally, I always thought the guy was saying strawberries in a very thick Midlands accent. Strawberry Fields was first a single, but it later appeared on the album Magical Mystery Tour. Even the title of that album suggests the motor vehicle theme, a theme which crops up again and again in the Beatles' work. The title song of the album suggests that everyone come along for the magical bus ride, which is, as they say, just dying to take you away. In an earlier song, She's Leaving Home, the Beatles tell us when the accident happened.
Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock as the day begins.
Of course, that doesn't exactly jibe with the reference to Stupid Bloody Tuesday in I Am the Walrus, and you have to change the sex of the song's protagonist to make the reference to Paul, but let's call that a kind of artistic license. Visually, there is this about that. The back cover of the album on which the song appears has the libretto printed on it. The words are printed over a picture of the Beatles, and one of them, George Harrison, is making a gesture as if pointing. And it looks like he's pointing directly to that line about Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock. Also, let us dutifully note that the picture portrays the four Beatles standing side by side, but one of them has his back to the camera. Guess who? Also, since the album is called Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, there are several pictures of the Beatles wearing old-fashioned band uniforms. In one, Paul is wearing an armband on which are embroidered the letters OPD. Now, in Great Britain, OPD is like our DOA. It stands for Officially Pronounced Dead. All of this is very interesting, but so, again, what? Paul himself has, since the controversy erupted, appeared to reporters to protest the news of his untimely death. But instead of slackening interest in the story, it seems only to have inflamed it. If only we had fingerprints then and now. We don't, of course, but we do have his recorded voice. And there is a scientific technique called voice printing, in which a graphic reproduction of the voice qualities is put on paper. A recognized expert in the field is Dr. Oscar Tosi of the Department of Audiology at Michigan State University. And he has done voice print comparison of early Paul and late Paul.
My conclusions were that, as a subjective opinion, that the two voices correspond to the same man. However, this is not a positive statement because the samples that I received were actually very poor samples, too much background noise and so forth.
Dr. Tosi, could you tell us what samples you used in analyzing the McCartney voice?
Well, we used one tape recorded in 1964, and the second sample was a recording telephone conversation in which a man who called himself McCartney may produce some statements that he was alive, actually.
How many words did you actually analyze spectrographically?
Well, we listened very carefully to both tapes, and we found about 25 common words in both tapes. And so we used this amount of words, around 25 words.
The commonly recognized chef d'oeuvre from all of the Beatles' work is the composition A Day in the Life. It is a seething commentary on contemporary life, but at another level, it is about Paul McCartney's death. Say, lucky man who made the grade or made the grave? We spoke of plastic surgery for a look-alike earlier, and some claim to find a clue about that in the song Eleanor Rigby. Again, it is necessary to change the sex of the protagonist to get the McCartney angle.
Waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people.
In fairness, let's point out that that album, Revolver, came out in 1966, close to the time of the supposed accident, and it may even have preceded it. References to death and dying are legion in the Beatles' later work. From Sgt. Pepper, a song called Good Morning, but the dawn here is not greeted with a cheerful opening line.
To do to save his life, call his wife in. Nothing to say but what a day, how's your boy been? Nothing to do, it's up to you. I've got nothing to say but it's okay.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, yes.
A popular Beatles single was called Penny Lane.
Penny Lane is in my ears and in my
It was once common practice in England to place pennies on a dead man's eyes to keep them from opening. There's a song called Savoy Truffle, which talks innocently about sweets and desserts, but perhaps just desserts and the endings of things, like the end of a meal. The tone quite suddenly shifts to a description of felt pain. In the same album, there's a song titled I'm So Tired. And at the end of the track, as the music ends, someone speaks a gibberish phrase.
I'll give you everything I've got, a little piece of mine.
The simplest gibberish.
Now the clue is supposed to come out when you take the gibberish phrase and play it backward. What the voice is saying is, Paul is dead now. Miss him, miss him, miss him. What confused me, though, was the fact that when the record is played forward, despite the fact that that phrase is gibberish, it is definitely a man speaking and not some kind of a tape trick. How come, then, when you reverse the tape, a semi-intelligible phrase emerges? So, here's my original contribution to the Paul McCartney controversy, an experiment. Very carefully, into a tape recorder, I spoke this phrase, Paul is dead now. Miss him, miss him, miss him. Then I took that tape and turned it backward so that it sounded like this.
Miss him, miss him, miss him, I'm dead, zero.
Then I rigged up another tape recorder and microphone and a set of earphones. And then, playing the tape of myself backward, I tried to mimic that sound so that I was actually speaking the backward phrase.
Miss him, miss him, miss him, I'm dead, zero.
Then, after I'd practiced a few times, I tried saying the phrase backward without listening to the original tape.
Miss him, miss him, miss him, boy, did see all.
Please excuse the embarrassed tone in my voice there, wouldn't you be? Anyway, I finally took that tape of me speaking the forward phrase backward and turned it backward, and this is what happened.
Oh, he's dead now. Miss him, miss him, miss him.
Which is very close, of course, to... Now, does that prove anything to you? It did to me, and I got terribly excited about it at the time, but I can't really remember what it was. More seriously, the whole cycle of references to death comes to its present form in the new Beatles album, Abbey Road. In the first cut, called Come Together, the themes of death and resurrection are unmistakable.
He said,
that one and one and one makes three line could apply to the triune Christian God or to the three remaining Beatles. As a matter of fact, there's a visual reference to that threeness on the album cover. On the back, letters on a brick wall read, Beatles, Abbey Road. But just in front of the word Beatles is a strange pattern of dots. And if you connect them with a line, like those puzzles we had when we were kids, they make the numeral three. One of the most convincing clues of the whole series would appear to be hidden deep inside the work called Revolution 9. This is a long collage of sounds, of snatches of conversation, of fragments of music, and the tapes are all mixed as a montage, apparently in a random pattern, and on first hearing, unintelligible. The total feeling of the work comes close to that of musique concrète. The work has a funny effect on people occasionally. I've known several individuals who, when exposed to it, have listened about three-quarters of the way through and then turned it off. Not because they disliked it, but because some vague something in the cumulative effect of the music is quite truly terrifying in the inner brain. Repeated listenings do not bring out what that something is, but this furor over Paul has. It involves tampering with the tape again. During Revolution 9, a voice is heard screaming, right, right, right. And someone finally discovered that if you play the right channel of the stereo alone, all kinds of things happen that are masked in the two-channel version. First, you can hear a voice talking about hitting a light pole and getting to a surgeon. From there, Revolution 9 drifts into a full stream-of-consciousness Freudo-Joycean montage, and it is very, very easy to hear in it the kind of splintered and pain-racked thought flashes that might be going on in the brain of a musician who has been badly hurt in an automobile accident. My wings are broken, and there are flames.
My wings are broken, and so is my hair. I am not
There are random thoughts of dancing, of money, as the surgeons work around the area of the shoulder.
Financial imbalance.
Thrusting it between his shoulder.
The Watusi. The twist.
There is absolution, sacraments, final rites.
Take this, brother. May it serve you well.
There are the voices of women. There is music and a remembered football game. Hold that line. Live. Live. But then there is the final fade out, and there is death.
Even then, suppose you're singing this song. If you become naked.
Is Paul McCartney dead? I don't think so. Paul McCartney doesn't think so. But there is, or there appears to be, a considerable body of evidence that he is. Much, much more than we have dealt with in this brief period. The whole business is fun, right? But there's more to it than that. Ask someone tomorrow, what do you think of the McCartney thing? He well might respond, well, I don't believe it myself, but did you hear this or did you see that? And that's the point at which the phenomenon becomes a legitimate exercise in mass psychology. An expert in the field of collective behavior is Dr. Stanley Milgram of the City University of New York Graduate Center.
The two elements that underlie a rumor are first, ambiguity, and secondly, importance. Whenever you have an event that is ambiguous and yet important, you get rumors developing about it. And I think if you look at the McCartney issue, you'll see that both elements are present. We're not certain whether he's dead or not. The cues that have been provided are at best ambiguous. And on the other hand, there's no question as to the emotional importance of a member of the Beatles. I mean, after all, the Beatles are the saviors of this decade, and they're especially important to defining the tone and distinctive flavor of this decade. So you have both elements, ambiguity and importance, and that's exactly the breeding ground for rumor. It hasn't reached its full extent by any means. I think we're still in the early stages of its development. It may reach a crest in a few weeks or a few months. It may have a great deal more expansion before it just dies as a topic of interest. It may reach its peak, perhaps, at about Easter time, because there the whole issue of whether an important figure is alive or dead comes to the fore of many people. The whole question of resurrection comes to a fore. So that would be a natural peaking point where at that time people will not say that McCartney is dead, but that he has risen.
Dr. Milgram could be proved correct. The Beatles are known to be working on a new album, with its release expected in a few months. Perhaps on it will be the clue to prove conclusively that Paul McCartney... This is Christopher Glenn.
Number nine.